Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Listen to my body. We haven't been in touch much lately. Never have I calmly dealt with anything they ever gave me. You should always know. I cannot let go of anything that's wrong me, anything that made me secondary. So many of them clearly like the idea of me in theory. I shrunk, moved and changed, and still you felt the same.
Welcome to The Body Protest.
In this podcast, we combine storytelling and science to better understand our relationship with our bodies. I'm Honey Ross.
And I'm Nadia Craddock, and this is season 4.
3, 2, 1.
Hi, body protesters. I actually covered my eyes.
I had to
with my hand, like the monkey emoji.
Why? We get so shy with each other. It's quite sweet. It's actually, we are quite cute, aren't we? We're very cute.
We are.
Inside and out, which is nice. Not that that matters, but you know. Can you believe it's the final episode of the season?
I cannot, honestly. It's like,
woof. What a whirlwind. What a season. We've talked to so many amazing people as well. Do you have any reflections or any conversations that particularly stood out to you, spoke to your soul?
I think for me, it's like they all do in their own way. And I think what I always think about is just how grateful I am for people being so generous and open with us.
Completely.
And how we ask some like difficult questions, I think. It's hard to talk about some of these topics, but I think people are very generous, and I just feel it's such a honour to listen to what people have to say and how they've kind of figured things out and continue to figure things out and navigate the world that we live in relation to their body. So I think that's what I think about it. How about you? What any big reflections or thoughts about this series in particular?
No, I think I feel very similarly that you do. Of I'm just constantly so grateful that people are so generous with us and so open and vulnerable and, yeah, are willing to kind of share things that are very personal. And I'm really appreciative. And I know this podcast has helped me so much, and I just hope it's helped other people. I love making it, and I just love working with you and Daisy, our wonderful producer. It's been a great season.
Lovely. I love how at the end of our seasons we just go into...
We just get a little mushy.
We love each other.
We love it because we do. It's we nice. Do. I'm like, we hey, do feelings don't scare me. Hey. let's talk about emotions, baby. Absolutely no one will stop. I'm like,
I just become this like, lovely love fest. And I think, yeah, all of our guests and I think I'm always like, oh, it'd be so, I want one day to have all of our guests all come together.
Body protest all stars.
Just like for my, like, for like our... party, like, you know, just come. And
the amount of like COVID post-COVID dinners we've been promised from our guests, I'm like, they better make good. Like the minute
prosciutto's gnocchi, I'm still like, that is like on my like list of things that gnocchi. I will be coming back to.
Well, this actually is a wonderful segue.
Scots pie.
Lemon
meringue pie.
We've got a lot of desserts. We've got to go to Melbourne to collect. We've got a lot of traveling, but we'll go body protest on tour to food tour. That'll be, oh, I love that.
Yeah, place. I would like the food tour, but I would also like everyone to come together at some magical point, which I don't know how feasible that would be, but like, I just like to imagine it.
But maybe Body Protest Fest 2022. 2025, like when we have more capacity. I'm not going to make that sort of concrete promise, so don't hold me to that. But it could be nice. Let's get into the episode, our final episode of the season. It's a really special one. We are talking to pop star extraordinaire, self-esteem, Rebecca Lucy Taylor. Oh my God.
I think this happens to me every now and again, but I was so taken by what she was saying, I just stopped talking.
I just was like... No, I was entranced by her, truly. I hear it. So this is a little... this episode, we do talk about sexual assault, so that is just a warning. If this is not the episode for you, we completely respect that, and we do try and handle it sensitively, but of course, you know yourself. If it's not the episode for you, we will understand, and you join us next season, and we can't wait. But yeah, Rebecca was so incredibly open and honest with us. It was a really special episode, I think. I'm really proud to be ending with this one, actually.
Yes, and she did say for us to go to one of her concerts. So, honey, please, can we do that? Can that be a 2022 plan?
Honestly, can we go? I will scream if we don't. Like, I have to see her sing Prioritize Proto live. Like, I love her so much. I'm like a proper fangirl. Like, I mean, and I think you will hear this as the podcast goes on. I am gushing about Rebecca. But at one point, she did say she wanted to take my pants off. Or she said she wanted to take her pants off or something. And I was like, wow.
I think it's so interesting how we both react when we're kind of in awe. So I think you gush and I just go silent.
No, true. Yeah, it does show us very much like this is our coping in this moment.
This is how we react to like people we really like.
I like scattergun love at them. Like, I'm literally like, you're so beautiful. I'm obsessed with you. And it's like, what's, why? Chill out, honey. But anyway, I don't think we scared her off, and we will be going to your show. Rebecca, this is now directly to you if you are listening. But anyway, we really hope you enjoy this episode. It means a lot to us, and we hope you've enjoyed the season. Please let us know if you have, and subscribe to our Patreon. Here is Self-Esteem.
Yeah, call me Rebecca, but my artist name is Self-Esteem. I'm a musician. I was in a band for 10 years and then I wanted to do it on my own and not have people telling me no anymore. So I took the leap and I've done 2 records as a solo artist. And the first one was like, I had a great time and thought it was brilliant. But it was, I guess it didn't really work. And then this one, I'm having, I'm winning all the awards and everyone's going mad for me. And I'm BBC introducing Artist of the Year and all that kind of shit. So, yes, now I'm a thing, apparently. But I've always been a thing.
You've always been a thing. Well, yeah, what is it? It takes 10 years to make an overnight success, right?
Yeah,
I am such a fan of this album and I feel like I'm excited to go back and listen to all of your work.
Amazing. I'm really curious how you came to settle on Self-Esteem as a stage name.
Well, I literally was having a conversation 10 years ago about how band names are bad, like if you think about it, the band has to become good for the band name to not be a terrible band name. So apart from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, which I think is a great band name. So, and I always said if I ever had started another band, I'd call it Self-Esteem or Sex Appeal. And then when I was trying to sort of plotting to try and get out of the band and start my own thing, it felt very brutal to be like, and now I'm gonna do the Rebecca Lucy Taylor album, fuck you guys, and so calling it an artist name or project name helped me be like, it's just a different thing I'm doing, it's not the end of our band, and which helps absolutely nobody. But I called it that just because I wanted a sort of way to do it, and it is a solo project, but I also think like calling it Self-Esteem has been accidentally like profoundly prophetic or something, because I didn't have any, and I didn't care that I didn't have any, and I didn't know and what the project itself has done and me going solo has done has taught me the importance of self-esteem, and therefore I've got like loads of it now, and I'm like, oh, that's a lovely narrative arc for the biopic. But yeah, that's how we got there.
That's amazing. I love that. I love the arc. And actually relates very nicely to a question that we ask all of our guests on the show. If you could tell us a little bit about your relationship with your body growing up, so as much as you feel comfortable.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I think about this all day, every day, honestly. And there's 5 women in my band, and we're all it really dawned on me recently, we are all like a lifetime, you know, it's a lifetime of being adult with worrying about it. And that like so unfair, isn't it? But yeah, my relationship has always been, I mean, truthfully, it's like, oh, you need to lose weight, has been like the narrative since I 12, 13 or something. Do you know what I mean? And no one in my family put that on me or anything like that, but it's just the motherfucking societal bullshit really got to me, because I wanted to be a pop star then. I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to be all these things. And I've just all, and they were always like, it's just a feedback loop within women for me that was, you know, so my school friends were, remember, like, the hottest girl in school was like, I'm fat, every fucking 2 days. And it'd be like, well, if you're fat, what the fuck am I? And then, like, round and round you go. And then you, obviously, my 20s were really fraught with men actually breaking my heart. And I'm really ashamed to admit it, but I guess here we go. It's like every time a man is like, you know, broken up with me or chosen someone else or cheated on me or whatever, just always... like so quickly, I'll just whiplash round to like, oh, it's because like you're not hot enough or something. Mm. It's as simple as that in my brain, and that's changed now, thank fuck. But yeah, it's always been this like thing I didn't appreciate, didn't like get. I was just ashamed of all the time, and I'm gorgeous. Do you know what I mean? What am I on about?
So gorgeous.
But not that like you have to be gorgeous, but like still, I'm like, bitch, you look good. Fuck off. You know, like, stop it. But, yeah, and I'm fascinated by it. And I mean, you can hear in the records, but I'm a real, like, therapy nut now. And the last 4 or 5 years of my life have really been penny-dropping moments in terms of feminism and self-esteem and my place in the world and, like, what is bullshit and what's made my 20s very difficult. And one of the things I've... you know, sometimes it comes in a bit, but like something I'm very fucking passionate about is ending that bullshit for my brain and therefore other people's brains.
No, and I think that feeds in really nicely to a follow-up, which is, you know, would you mind sharing some of those kind of penny drop moments or those, we like to call them aha moments, that's what Oprah calls them, which is...
Yeah, you know, oh, is it? Yeah.
I stand by that. Yeah. But it's that thing of, you know, what were those things where you went, hang on, this really is bullshit and I do deserve better. Like, what were those things for you?
Just to add as well, I went through a really severe breakup and... did what I never did every time I so all the times I break up, sort of felt less than or whatever, I'd be like, you need to lose weight, and but I never would. And then I did get a boyfriend that was so bad that I actually finally developed what we would now say is a fucking eating disorder, do you know what I mean, and shrunk and then started to like be over obsessed about my body and over sort of, I gave it too much attention. It didn't deserve, you know, me just being shrunken didn't really deserve the love it deserves all the time, you know what I mean? But I went through that, so it was like this horror. I was a right dickhead for a bit. I mean, I think I was like, I thought I was it for a bit, and that's bullshit.
Well, no, I hear this.
So the one end of the scale to the other, literally, and in terms of like, what I was like, when I put, so the penny dropping of the ahas, they start really going like, oh, you were no happier when you were this size that you thought you should be. My life actually got messier and more horrid, and so that's logic wise, let's start there. Yeah. And then I had a really beautiful relationship. Like, I came out and had a much more, the beginning of what has now become what I'm like now, which is like a balanced, fucking nice, natural, communicative relationships with people. And that was helpful to just begin the process of, it is never your body. It's just the relationships aren't right. And like, and it's misogyny, it's just the inherent patriarchal bullshit that makes you do that in your brain. And recently, I'm working on being like, not giving myself a hard time that it isn't my fault that my brain will ping pong to that. I'm not like a stupid idiot because my wiring is like you need to lose weight to get a boyfriend or whatever.
Completely. Well, it's that complicated thing of like, it's almost you hear the voice of the most popular girl in school in your head in the darkest moments, or you hear those societal inputs, and it's like learning to have the self-compassion and going like, that's not me. Like, this is a voice that has been put in my head by someone else. This has nothing to do with me. This is societal. This was predetermined. And like, I think that's something I love so much about your music, is I think you really teach women to practice positive self-talk, and you are, and you acknowledge negative self-talk. And that's something that, you know, you hear the voices in other people. You hear the voices that you're hearing. And I love that. I think that's something that's really powerful about your music that really touched me.
Yeah, I think obviously I'm doing a lot of interviews at the minute, and through them I've actually figured it out a bit, like, what am I on about? What am I doing? And I do think it is because of my, you know, have, you know, 30 years, shall we say, of really worried all the time, embarrassed of myself, so full of shame, really sure I'm the biggest loser in the room, you know. And that got backed up by evidence, which was, you know, people, you know, I had some awful, like, and a couple of really narcissistic, you know, textbook classic, you know, bad, horrible bastard boyfriends that, and I was so ready for someone to be like, you're not good enough, or bring me down a peg or two. But like, I was really good at what I did, and I am really good. I'm really talented, and I'm brilliant, and I'm a fun, nice person. But also was like, the world didn't treat me like that. But that wasn't the world's fault particularly. It was just, I think I was unlucky. And so when a man particularly wanted to go, you're shit, all that confidence, I was like, okay, that's just misplaced. That's like, I've made that up. You must be right, you know. And that's how, you know, all my 20s were just commandeered by that feeling. So now what I do, I think, for work is sort of show you before you can tell me my flaws, or sort of live so completely vulnerably and on show, and you've got all the facts, so you can't be mad with me, you can't you can't say anything to me I don't already know or have already worried about anyway, and like, yeah, it's a sort of weird like self-preservation. I feel bulletproof now because you can't, because it's there. I'm not lying or trying to be anything else, so why would you try and make me be? I don't know if that makes sense.
That does make sense, and it is also, you know, very fitting to your name of self-esteem, of like, you've improved your relationship with your self-esteem, and you hold yourself highly in your mind, and that is the most important thing. Of like, I definitely relate to having abusive narcissistic exes, and I completely hear that. And that's the thing, if you get so used to waiting for someone to knock you down a few pegs, that the minute someone does, you're like, ah, correct, they must have been right, and like, it's all there, we are.
So powerful. It's like, after it first happened to me, somebody gave me a book about it, and I was like, it was like a tick box.
Yes, like, you read through,
they're like, yeah, and you're like, oh, this is a whole thing. They should teach it in schools. Like, it's insane that, I was like, oh. It was as if, like, they were like, okay, you will be visited by a ghost on Christmas Eve. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like Scrooge going, oh, wait a minute, they told me this was going to happen. Like, it was, yeah, wild. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, right? But then the thing is as well, I think is so beautiful about your music is you hear how even after you've left those relationships, those voices stay with you and those experiences stay with you. And it's so true of, like, it's a constant unlearning and a constant, like, going like, no, I'm good enough, I'm here, you know, like, just not even fair. Turning up in any state is good enough, like, but like you said, you are a good, fun, beautiful, cool person, you've got a great brain, like, no one can take that from you, no one can take your art from you, like, that is all yours, no one can tell you shit.
Yes, exactly, and but listen, it comes for me weekly still, you know, I think this is an ongoing thing until I'm dead. I have a feeling as I go, you know, into my 40s and 50s, I've got a bit of a feeling it'll be a right laugh because there's something about letting go of this, like, I think just be the longer you're alive, I think helps. And then if you're like me, who is obsessed with, I am obsessed with just not having to live like that anymore. You know, I refuse. It's just not fair. And that's what I hope my music does for people, is speeds it up a bit. I hope pennies are dropping all up and down the bloody country for women who aren't married with kids yet, going like, oh, that's also doesn't mean I'm not a failure. Like, I'm so passionate about that. cut to me like getting married and having a baby and everyone loving me, but yeah. Like I thought, 5 years ago, I thought such finite truths that I would now be like, oh God, that was generalization, or like you know, you didn't know anything yet, you know, Missy kind of thing. So right now, as I sit here thinking I'm wise and I know all these things and I believe my decision-making is correct, in 5 years' time, maybe I won't be like that, and I'll have found new things out. And that's the biggest lesson I've learned, is like, this is ongoing until it isn't. And you just have to be open to and curious to, and ready to learn rather than being, because some of the things I think now, I might be like, oh, well, that was embarrassing. That's a terrible thing to stand by.
I think that message of it being it's not fair is so powerful, because I think it's so easy to internalise the problem and think it's an us problem, it's like a me problem, as opposed to something that's much bigger. And when you see that it's affecting everyone you know, or the majority of the people that you know at least, then you're like, oh no, this is not just a me problem, this is a much, much bigger problem. And I think that's a really powerful reminder. And then the other thing you're saying about how you can still have bad days, you can still have days where those thoughts creep in. And I think we talk about that in terms of body image flexibility, in terms of you can have the buffers to feel good in your body, but that's still, you can still hold those things at the same time and just recognize it and think, oh, I'm thinking some things that are like not helpful. Interesting. Yeah. Uh-huh. I wonder what that's about. I wonder what that's going on. And I think it's so common to let other people have the power to say, to talk about ourselves. And it's like, no, actually, we can reclaim that and be like, no, and all of those positive things that you're saying, and like, I am this, I am that. We have the power to do that.
Yeah, I think it should be a national outcry that my album has been such a big deal. Everybody losing their mind going, oh my God, I feel like no one's ever said it before. I'm like, what? This is, I'm not saying much, you know, I'm really not saying that much radical stuff. But this shows you how you know, kept bloody quiet we've been, and you have to, I'm shocked at how, you know, how people have taken this album on and been so grateful to me for saying it. And you're right, and the community from it, and the sort of like, I, whatever happens in my career now, I could flop, I could bomb, I could go out first on Strictly, fine, but like, I've done this, and I feel like I'm not alone anymore, and it's just, yeah, and I hope, you know, I think the more and more we can be like this, the better, because it's like a mass bluffing, isn't it? Like, we've been fed a lie, and it really
we're
is like
we're all holding it up together, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And if we all were to simultaneously drop it, good things might happen. And I think it's up to, you know, people like you are doing the Lord's work right now of like making people feel less alone in the carrying, in the weight that we all carry, this kind of patriarchal weight, like, you know, I listen to the 3-4-5 and sing it to myself in the mirror and like cry, you know, it's so hearing that. I was like, I remember, I think you posted it early when that album first came out on Instagram, of someone who tweeted like, Rebecca, like, self-esteem is like the wise woman in the toilet at the club going, break up with your boyfriend. Like, and it really is, you know, it's important, you know, that it's that camaraderie and saying you're not alone in this, this is a shared burden and we are all part of this together. And it's just, I love that you, it's an outcry of like, I don't know, it's just calling for women to ask for more. And I think that's so powerful, of going like, you can be multifaceted and messy and all of these wonderful, complicated, beautiful, fully functioning things. Like, there's so much in our existence.
When they were like, oh, you know, the Barbies came out being like, you could be a secretary or whatever. I'm like, they think like that was enough. Like, okay, cool. We've told women they can have jobs. Cool. There's never been another, in my lifetime, I wasn't like, I'm shocked at how unfucking feminist I've been, only recently. And I'm like, wow. And that's not because I'm a dickhead. It's because there was no access to anything. It wasn't, you know, there's nothing. How do you learn anything unless it's on the telly?
But it's so true, because it's getting it out there in an accessible way, that it's communicating those messages in a way that people are ready to listen and want to listen. And I think that's what's particularly powerful about it to me.
Yeah. I think that I'm not being like, I'm just clever. Oops. but I really did just make this, because I didn't give a shit anymore. I was like, what do I want to make? And I, because I've for a long time wanted my life to change. I wanted to be listened to and looked at and a thing. And it just can't, you know, in conjunction with my therapy and all the rest of it, I was like, you're going to just have a miserable life if you constantly desperately want this next thing. So make what you want to make, say what you want to say. And it really was that organic. And then now it really is like backdated. Am I going, oh, I'm saying something people don't say. And oh, wow, we admit people really do need this. And, you know, like it is accidental. Which, you know, now my third album will be like, I'll be too self-aware and you'll be like, this is unlistenable, live, laugh, love shit.
It's funny, that is a good lesson for everyone though as well. Just if you're a musical, not to be like, if you're so obsessed with the next thing, and this is, maybe I'm talking to myself here, but like, but if you're so obsessed with the next thing that you're not enjoying the process and you're just going to be miserable in that, you're just on that wheel, like trying to catch something that's always, like the goalpost is always moving.
Yeah, it's a hard one that, it's really hard, especially for me. I've always been like, what's next, what's next, what's next? But try, I mean, mindfulness and all that, I'm like, be in the moment! Like, I can't do it like,
Enjoy the journey. Enjoy the process.
I think screaming mindfulness into your psyche isn't how they think you should do it, but you know, whatever works.
Yeah.
But yeah, just letting go and if you apply that to life as well, because I do, you know, whatever's going to happen is coming for you, whether you engineer it or not, or whether you play the game with the guy you've just met and, you know, like, don't text him back and all that sort of thing. Don't be too keen, all that shit. I'm like, nah, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
I was saying to Honey before we started, you're the first pop star I have ever spoken to, probably the only pop star I will ever speak to. So I'm having a moment. I would love for you to tell us a little bit about the music industry. How did you get into music? What has your experience been like so far in the music industry? And what gave you the push to create this space for yourself?
So like I said, I was in a band. I really want to be an actress. And I still think I could have a real gargoyle pivot, to be honest. I sang at school, I played the drums, I was obsessed with music. I was like, music was my thing. I was like a dickhead, you know. I was like, ugh, about other bands. So like, we'd only go and see certain things, like awful. So I was always wanted to do it. And at the same time as trying to get into drama school, I'd started a band. And I got no's from drama school auditions and got, yeah, go on then's from the music industry, basically. So me and this guy had a band. We toured up and down the fucking country for 10 years. Did 4 albums and was on an indie label. Everyone I worked with was a man. Perfectly nice man, you know. No one... none of my horror stories were from any of the immediate people involved in Slow Club. The band never got there, in my opinion, you know. We never broke through. We never had a big moment. Like, gigs were always like, please sell out. If they did, great. But it was never, you know, all the... And I'm ambitious and I love telly shit. I love all the things you're not meant to love if you're an indie musician. I love the photo shoots, love the videos. I love all of it. And, you know, but I was with, you know, a handful of men that really didn't want to do it like that. They wanted to be artists that don't care, you know. And that, as you can imagine, was very anti-me. But it felt like if I tried to be like that, maybe I'll be more popular within the band. I don't know. Just didn't work anyway, whatever. So I had a sort of miserable time where I felt really like I can't be myself. I can't get anything done. And my ambition is like really regarded as like icky. And that was a tough thing to do because we'd get reviews back and, you know, that would talk about my voice or something. And I would be really worried because I'd be like, oh, that's shit, that's going to annoy them, you know? And then I was like, in what world? It was like Dusty Springfield ever like, oh no, they told me I'm good. And they said I can sing in a review, what help? You know, and so from that sort of point, and I was just sort of begging for help and into the management as well. I'm a bit like, I've got all these ideas and it just a bit more like, just stay in your lane, you know, ultimately is what ended up happening. And which you can apply to my experience of just being a woman at all, is just like, just be quiet and get on with it. Do what everyone wants you to do. Not, don't be a diva. Don't cause a scene, don't be too much, don't just be agreeable, and then life was apparently going to be easier. So yeah, that's all I did for a very long time. But when it came to it, the straw that broke the camel's back was, I was like, I just want, we'd made a record with loads of strings and brass, and I was like, okay, I really love orchestral stuff, like that's something in music I can get on board with. We're about to go to make another album, I really want, let's just focus on that, being able to make some lush orchestral stuff. And the band didn't want brass or strings on the next record, and I was like, no! Like, are you kidding me? So yeah, it was that really that made me go, life is too fucking short, I can't do this anymore. And so I had to make the space for me as my personality, even. I had to not feel shit every day about what my personality is like. And secondary to that, actually, was I need to make music that I care about and love and I'm proud of. And it's not a compromise. But even that, it was really fed to me, you know, not by, again, with caveat all the time, nobody specifically did this, but it just had there was a general vibe that, like, what I wanted to do wasn't cool. I don't know how else to say it. That's so wrong because it's so cool. What I do is, like, there's nothing cooler than being real. And, you know, and there was no reality in, you know, trying to be in a cool band for me.
Yeah. It just sounds like a misalignment or, like, a misfit.
Absolutely. And you could get him on a podcast and he'll be like, she wants to do all this shit I fucking hate, and she was Mardy and she was this and she was that. You know, I'm a dickhead. I was absolutely as much of a miserable presence for them as they were for me. Like, I'm not saying, like, they were mean at all. But, misaligned. And what I learned now is, like, if you're going to make art, it's very hard to make art at all. It's really hard to make art that anyone can connect with. And if you're diluting it with too many sort of cooks at the pot or whatever, sometimes it can make magic, but most of the time I think it just makes a sort of diluted, confused sort of MO. And for the most part, I'm glad, you know, he's making solo records now, and they are, you know, they're beautiful, and they aren't encumbered by my, like, need to wail and have a pop star moment. So, you know, the right thing happened for everybody, I think, anyway.
But I think it's hard when you're in it to be like, it's just a complicated one, isn't it? Of kind of removing yourself from a situation like that. And it's that kind of, it's that inherent feeling of, like, I don't know what it is exactly that I'm doing, but whatever it is seems to be displeasing the people around me. And I can't understand why, I can't gauge why my intentions seem to be just the wrong ones. And then a lot of the time it's because they scare people. Like, you know what I mean? Of, like, wanting to have that freedom and that vulnerability and that honesty, it frightens people that you're capable of being in tune with that. I think so many people can't handle that because everyone would like to be able to do that.
Oh, that's so true.
That's my theory.
Isn't it true? Like, especially when, like, now and again, I still encounter quite, like, bitchy women who really don't agree with my lifestyle. and I'm, you know, it's just lovely. It's another thing that doesn't come naturally. It's not a knee jerk at all. But I'm capable of understanding it. I just represent the choices you could have made, and nobody wants to feel. I don't want to feel like, fuck, what might that have been better? Shit, I'm capable of that too. It's like, yeah, you're right. And as human beings, we just become defensive and behave bizarrely. That then has. Especially if you're as sensitive as me. God, it's... So some people in my life would have been like, I never did that. And I'd be like, they did this. They looked at me like this. I'm sure of it. You know, and that's also not anyone else's fault. I am...
No, I'm exactly the same. They said it with their eyes. No,
You're not a mind reader. Like, so why have you decided what the paramount this person definitely thinks? I'm like, oh God, yeah. But yeah, it's baby steps, isn't it? Like, but yeah, the more spreading that your eloquence just then is like, oh, felt like taking my trousers off. Like, oh, it's a lovely feeling. Like, oh, yes.
I would love to ask, so obviously your album it's a real journey of kind of pain and heartbreak to kind of freedom and reclamation. It's really powerful to listen to. I would love if you could tell us a bit of the story behind it. Like, I know you kind of already did of saying it was you getting to that breaking point of being like, you know what, I'm just going to say what I fucking want because why the fuck not? But I would love if you could talk a bit more about that.
I'd sort of found the sound on the first record, I thought, and lyrically, it's never an issue for me lyrically. I've always got something I want to say. but yeah, I had a really shit, I had a shit one where I had, you know, the sexual assault that wasn't clear cut, you know, and it's, you know, something I'm still working on, which is like, how can you can't, it's such a tough one, isn't it? Justice is so unlikely. And then especially when you add in to the fact that, like, if you feel it's hard to talk about it, but like complicit wise, it's muddy. It's a grey area. It's a fucking grey area. You know, like I May Destroy You. When I watched I May Destroy You, I was like, fucking hell, yeah, this, and this is why, and it's very, very difficult to get over it if you can't be like, this bad person did this, you know? Yeah, and you, and that was fucking like commandeering my life, was this, like, I don't know how to move forward. And so the record really, there was no way I wasn't going to be working through that on it. And because what I now see is if something's, so many things happen to me or I do things that are shitty and I'm like, I can't get over it. I just hold on all the time to these negative emotions, and the songs help me. Sometimes they help me get my side out, you know, or my vague side out. So that was enough. Like some of the songs that deal with the sexual assault, I'm like, oh, like that's a bit of a help because I've been able to articulate something I can never speak about. I could never name a name, you know, like, and that's something I've got to live with. But yeah, just articulating even a little bit, it was helpful. And then also, like, if I've been a dick, sort of saying it helps me be like, heal from and learn from my dickness as well. And yeah, so the whole album is just like a combo of those things. And I used to write songs just, I don't know, with like an agenda, which was like, you've hurt me, and this song is going to really make you change your mind and want me. And because my romantic relationships just don't sort of operate in that way anymore. That's not what I'm writing about anymore. And it's almost like we've cut through the sort of chaff or whatever, and this is the meat. Wheat?
Well, no, it feels like this is your purest voice, isn't it? You know, you've really gotten to a point where you're like, I am sharing the rawest, deepest stuff. And I just have to say, as a survivor of sexual assault, I'm so grateful that you have. You know, I didn't want to assume that was the story of the album, but I definitely felt it when I was listening, and I was like, no, I'm projecting. But to hear that I wasn't just projecting, you have made me feel less alone, as your work has done countless times, and I know I'm not the only one who feels that way. There are countless people that you've made feel less alone in your bravery to talk about such things in such a poetic, coherent way. Like, and it's so painful to talk about, so I would never make you want to talk about it, but like, I'm very grateful, and thank you for sharing.
Yeah, no, thank you. And like, I think as well, just as a sort of a concept artistically, I'm like, what do I do about the fact that I still love being a fucking sexy bitch? Do you know what I mean? Like, the thing it took from me was like, I love having a laugh, I love having sex, I love having multiple partners, I love doing what I want, I love not being scared of my life. And you've took all that in an instant. And you know, this is a societal thing as well, isn't it? But like, you can't, you know, I can never, the way they held that girl's knickers up in the court is like the, do you know that story? And they were like, she's wearing lacy knickers, so what does she expect was going to happen, you know? And like that, as a just overriding concept that still tracks for a lot of people in this world, you know, that's a viable fucking thing to say. You know, that's all consuming to me mentally. And so the album sounds like that because I'm like, I'm just trying to make sense of that or change that or just, and it's all very selfish. It's all very much for me. And thank God a byproduct is helping other people because I love to do that. And, but yeah, no, I say it all the time as a bit of a joke, but like I had to speak and write like this because I'm going crackers. And it's such a tough subject, you know. It's a fucking hard subject where you, I mean, there's no, it feels like there's nothing like it in any other crime that puts a victim through worse than the crime itself. Like what is worse is what they do to you if you want to say anything about it. That's wild.
Yeah. If you seek justice, or if you attempt to even talking to friends, you know what I mean? It's such a complicated thing, and like people don't know how to deal with it. And like
my heart's racing now that I'm even alluding to it, and I'm like fuck. You know. So yeah, the album is my tiny way at regaining control, and also celebrating the person I am who didn't deserve that. You know, just because I'm not a normal pious fucking woman. You know, so when it happened, I was like, well, it was a matter of time before this happened to you, because you live really dangerously. And I actually don't, you know, I just live like I deserve to live.
You don't.
And I was lucky, you know.
But I'm so grateful. I'm so, so grateful. You, but like, fuck me. Like everything you were saying, like, it's that thing of, you know, as a person who was hypersexual, like, you know, I loved a good time mm-hmm. before it happened to me, and after it happened to me, navigating that mm-hmm. it's really hard, and figuring out of how to be a good victim if everybody expects you to be crying in a shower. Everybody wants you crying in the fucking shower, and I'm like, but what if I want to still be a sexual person, and how do I navigate that? And I think your music put that into words for me, which I've never been able to do, so I'm very grateful.
Goosebumps. Yeah, amazing, thank you.
So, to a slight pivot, I would love to talk about the importance. You've spoken a bit about this, the importance of kind of claiming your queer identity publicly and kind of advocating for the queer community. I'd love if you could talk about why that was so important to you and what you've learned about yourself through doing that.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? I'm starting to say pansexual. I feel like a dickhead. Like, I feel like I'm like a boomer.
No, I've been starting to say it too. I feel it as well.
Bisexual or whatever you want to call it, like, any gender, or, you know, but for a long time in Rotherham in the noughties, it was like I liked women as well as men, and I liked them equally, and it was never like a massive deal for me. But then I do have this context that, like, I was in a band that toured, like, you know, I've got another friend who's queer, and we were in the same class, and, you know, they had a real job, and it was very difficult for them to. It's just wild in such recent history, I think, that it's been news at all, you know, to be queer. But I suppose I did a long. I always felt uncomfortable to me because I was, you know, a public person in a band, and you could come and see it, and I sang songs, and they were always about men, but I didn't, you know, they weren't necessarily about men, and that was just, like, boring shit. Felt very, really ashamed of it. And, yeah, so as soon as I could, in a way, again, caveat, no one made me feel this way, but it felt like if I came out in the band, it would be a bit of a, like, people would think I'm doing it as a thing or a phase or a, you know, and it's very hard when you're in a band because you're representing not just yourself. And all I realised is, like, that was really difficult, because when you're trying to represent this, you need as much space as possible to. It's hard, actually. I think, like, to be completely straight or completely gay, it's slightly easier in terms of how you communicate that and how it makes sense for other people. But, yeah, it's just important to me to be open about it, but then it's important for me to, like, not really have, you know, I've been invited on podcasts to talk about being bisexual, and I'm not doing that. I'm not, it's not news. I haven't got enough to say about it. And then the queer community in general has always been, it was always, you know, if there was like a gay guy at a slow club show, I'd be like, yeah, I see you. my people. Like, I've always, obviously, for obvious reasons, felt more comfortable in the company of queer people. Yeah, and I'm learning all the time. In the last 6 or 7 years, everything is changing about identity and gender and sexuality. And like I joked about being a boomer, but, you know, I essentially am. and you know, at the way that the world is opening up, and the ideologies that are now out there, and they are second nature to the fact that, like, even my mum could understand what, you know, they them is. Like, that's very exciting to me. I didn't think that would happen in my lifetime, where, like, true pivot and changes in perception. Obviously, there's all the shit that hasn't changed, but the idea that it's very, very, you know, Steve from my year at school who would understand now that I'm pansexual and that's not mind-blowing. That's cool. I mean, I'm only 35, but that's how recently it was and all right, you know. So that is why I'm just, yeah, pretty focused on helping people feel all right about who they are. And a lot of people don't feel all right about who they are or happen to be queer still, which is like shit.
I also think, especially with pansexuality, bisexuality, there's just so much baseline erasure of like, oh, well, either you're with a girl for attention or like, you know, like it's just... There's just but general bi erasure. Like, we talk about this. We've talked about this on the podcast quite a lot. And it's, you know, it's so important to have that representation and just have someone be like, yes. Like, and like, I love you saying, there's not even that much to say about it. It's just like, the fact that you are now present and public, and it's important. And it's, you know, and I'm so glad Steve's caught on. Like, it's really good.
It was news for him, but now this guy doesn't exist. But do you know what I mean? Like, when I think back through my childhood and my teens and my sexual coming of age, and, you know, I was bisexual right away, but there was no lexicon for me there. There was no point of reference. There was nothing. And that meant I didn't have a relationship properly with a woman till my mid to late 20s. And, you know, I'm pissed off about that. That's not fair either. All the girls I could have been sleeping with. all the slow club fans left unshagged by me.
So I love how your album really offers, like, to me it offers kind of practical advice. It feels like it's like reminding you to breathe and like breaking out of negative thought patterns. Like, I think I love the way you talk about your thought process. I mean, I've gushed about you a lot this episode. But I would love to ask, what are some of the tools you use to help yourself feel at home in your body? Like, what are things that make you feel nice and grounded?
Yeah, I mean... I hate answering with this, but do you know what? It smells. Making things nice smells is like my only... When my girlfriends are like fucking done or I'm heartbroken or, you know, self-esteem out the window, I'm like, just get the fucking candle going, baby. Like, it's the best thing you can do for yourself. It's the night... Like, I really wish I had a better answer. But for me, if it's all the fucking shit has hit the wall again, it's like, how do I make my environment... be loving towards me or something, I guess. And like,
completely,
yeah. And like, prioritize pleasure really as a concept is about how I bring it back to me, or how I, that loving yourself, it's a real motherfucker as of a sentence, I think. Like, when I first started therapy, she was like, you hate yourself, and I was like, yeah, lol. And she was like, you need to love yourself, and I'm like, how? It's all, you know, I think we've been fed a real sanitized, like, live, laugh, love placard kind of, you know, way of doing it. But, and only now, having gone through quite a few years of trying, and it's so slow and it takes so long, but these incremental little things, as stupid as a really nice smelling fucking candle, you know, that is where it starts. It's like putting yourself first. Your needs aren't stupid and your needs aren't selfish. So that's, yeah. And then, you know, order the fucking pizza if you think that's going to make today a bit better than it was. Or, you know, say no to the thing you don't want to go to. Like, it's all those things that I don't know about you guys, but fuck me, I've been made to think I'm really a selfish arsehole if I don't want to spend £400 on someone's hen do that I won't have much fun at, you know? Like, and that's as simple as that, where I'm like, oh, I don't have to do that.
I love, well, yeah, that's a two-pronged thing for me of, like, one, creating a space for yourself and going, I'm worthy of nice things and I'm worthy of creating a lovely environment for myself. And then two, it's like, I don't have to do anything I don't fucking want to do. Like, anything that makes you feel weird or uncomfortable, you don't have to do that. Like, I'm so glad you said that about the Hindus. No, it's very important.
that really is the aha for me was that. And I'm doing all these interviews and I'm like, what is prioritized pleasure? And, you know, male journalists especially, like, she's going to say vibrator. She's going to say vibrator. And I don't. I'm like, sorry, it's me. I want to go home when I want to go home. You know, the amount of like, no, stay for one more. And I'm like, I don't want to, but I feel such guilt that now I'm out having another drink I don't want, another drink that's going to make me feel worse or make me do more stupid things or send madder text messages. And also, this isn't for me, it's for you. And it really is as simple as like going home when you want to. That's what I'm preaching.
Yeah. Well, going like things that make you uncomfortable rather than swallowing them down like we've all been taught to do as women. No, because it comes at a fucking cost to you. Like, no, you are worth leaving when you feel uncomfortable. Like, you don't ever have to sit and put up with that feeling. Like, was it Kim Cattrall says? I don't ever want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to be in a situation that makes me unhappy for more than an hour. I'm like, yes.
That was so spot on.
I've misquoted that, but
so it's good.
Important.
Yeah. Yeah, and isn't it sad that that's groundbreaking? Because, you know, I've got straight male friends who are like, cannot compute that I've ever been this addled with shit, you know? Because they've just never, if they want to go home, they go home. Like, it's so weird. It's a domino effect, and it's not as simple and clear cut as this. Obviously, it's all really multifactorial about who you are, where you're from, everything you've been through. But for the most part, I've just always not done what I want. And that it can be as serious as, you know, when I didn't want to do that, but I'm going to do it because you want me to do it sexually or whatever. And that's, you know, where you get into that shit I spoke about earlier. Or is like what feels sort of silly and nothing as like, yeah, I want to go home from the pub. No, mate, I don't want to have another one because you fancy someone at the bar, so we've got to stay longer. You know, they're as damaging. And I know it sounds sort of stupid, but it really is, because that informs the other. And yeah, anyway, I really do sound 3 a.m. right now.
It doesn't sound stupid at all. It sounds wonderful. You're on the right podcast. Like, a lot of our podcasts is like emotional 3 a.m.
Good, good.
And I think it's such a good note to end on, like, prioritize what you want, because what's the alternative? And we're going back to earlier in the conversation about it, just you're just going to feel miserable. So I don't know, with that, Rebecca, it's been so wonderful listening to you. I've felt like I've listened to you and your music and then listened to you here today, and you just have so much wisdom to share, and I think can help so many. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And just one question we like to end on. We'd love to know how we, like, honey and I, and then our listeners can support you and your work.
Oh, yeah, just stream the record or buy it. That's even better. My website is selfesteem.love. I'm touring next year in March. A few of them are sold out already because I'm having my 15 minutes of fame, apparently. I'm playing literally every festival you've ever heard of, including like Ben's Back Garden Festival next year. So see me at festivals, and I've got a little book that you can buy of my poetry. Yeah, just buy my shit, basically. That's how you can help. And also, you know, spread the word, share it. And if your mate has got dumped, it's my best thing I want people to do is say, good.
Listen to this. My friend did just go through a hard breakup, and the first thing I went was like, have you listened to something? Like, literally, I've been like bombarding people with your music, so don't worry. Like, good. I've already been doing the support.
Makes me so the amount of DMs I get where they were like, your album helped me leave this like shit boyfriend, and I'm like, oh yeah, baby, that's a good shit, that's what I love.
Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an absolute dream.
My stomach and my heart never align. Wish they'd communicate. Every single morning, look in the mirror and think of you again. It's not healthy to talk this way to me, so I'm gonna try say
I just wanna let you know that's a point in you.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.